listening to another Netcast production brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters at FancyPantsGangsters.com. Because those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet.
Blogulator Radio. I'm Qualler.
I am Bridget.
We're here with the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network and here to talk about all things television.
Television!
Woo! We talk about pop culture things in general at theblogulator.com and specifically we talk about television here. So,
television. You know, it's difficult to talk about television during the summer months. And of course, the summer months are generally when we have more time to watch television.
Right.
But as we are no longer HBO subscribers, there aren't a lot of new shows airing in the summer, or not a lot of shows airing, period, during the summer. So, Qualler, what do we fill our television time with, since we don't have...
Well, I was going to say the conundrum of summer TV is that we have all this free time, and we're all like, hey, I'm ready to go. Ready to watch some TV. And then TV's like, oh, sorry, actually, wait till fall.
Right, when you're busy.
Although I think that's going to change a little bit with, Breaking Bad returning in July. And,
that's true.
You know, we have other ways to watch
HBO shows, too. It's not as strict as it used to be in terms of, you know, shows beginning in the fall, ending in
True.
The spring, and then nothing but reruns during the summer. So,
True.
Qualler's right, we've got some stuff to look forward to.
Yeah, but let's focus on how sad we are and how we need to watch repeats of...
It's awfully
of
hard.
Other ...of other shows, because that's what we're here to talk about today.
Right.
I didn't mean to take us off on a...
No, it's true.
...random tangent.
We're quite sad. It's hard.
It's awfully hard.
We do have new episodes of Friday Night Lights, which we talk about ad nauseum here.
Yeah.
But other than that, we've been watching a lot of television on DVD.
Yeah, here to talk about a few of those shows. We have kind of a summer catch-up project, if you will, and that's... Maybe not so much catch up as kind of rewatching
re-enjoying.
Yeah. What's the first one we're going to talk about?
On our hit list?
The
first one is one that I actually wrote a lengthy blog post about why I hated this show without ever actually having watched it. And I said I was never going to watch it. Fans, you know what I'm talking about already.
Fans of theblogulator.com.
HBO's Deadwood. Well, I meant specifically my fan.
Oh, I know.
Bridget.
Oh, I know. I know. Yeah. You have a lot of fans.
I do have a lot of fans. But yeah, Deadwood, HBO.
Kind of a case of don't judge a book by the cover, Bridget.
Right. I think maybe I've learned my lesson.
You're learning.
So I finally sat down and watched an episode with Qualler.
I got the Blu-rays.
Blu-rays.
Of Deadwood when it was on sale on Amazon.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. I love Blu-ray. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
The menus are so much better.
Oh, yeah. I could never go back to buying I'll never buy a DVD again.
Regular menus make me scoff.
Regular menus make me vomit.
Menus that aren't as interactive and like the little icon that comes up when you're using your Blu-ray player for your PlayStation that instead of just a little disc, it shows, like, a photograph of the show.
That's so much better.
Ugh, I would never go back to regular DVD.
No. So because it was on Blu-ray and now we have it, Qualler, Chris, and I actually all sat down to watch it the other night.
We watched the pilot episode.
Yep. I have to say, I'm in. I'm in for the ride.
Why are you in, Bridget?
Well...
What caused you to change your mind from they're all just dirty to actually this looks like an interesting show.
I still think they're dirty, but I didn't think I would it would have as many laughs per minute as I found it to be, maybe.
Oh, sure, sure.
I laughed a lot in the pilot episode, so it actually had, like, a sense of humor.
Yeah.
There are some funnier moments more than I expected there to be. I expected it to be really dark, really gritty, really just in-your-face, Deadwood, yeah, dirty,
well,
cowboys kind of stuff.
Me,
but it's you know, it's not so bad. And I don't know, all the things that you've been telling me, Qualler, the acting's good, the writing's good, it's an interesting show, we've got some interesting characters, and I kind of want to see how it all plays out.
Well, now it's like so many of the actors are on different shows now, so now watching it, I would imagine when it first started airing on HBO in 2004, that it was kind of a cast of unknowns, and now so many of the people are kind of like semi-stars. You know, you got Timothy Oliphant, who's starring in Justified now on FX.
Yeah, and I have to admit, if I may for a moment,
sure,
Timothy Oliphant was a big reason for me finally deciding to give the show a chance.
He's a handsome man.
That voice. Those eyes. That half smile that he does all
he's
the time.
That kind of talks like this.
But it's
a lot more like that on Deadwood, I think.
Come on now. Let's all just settle down.
Yeah,
I like him.
Yeah, so but you know, there's Timothy Oliphant, Ian McShane, who he was in Kings after this, but which was a fairly short-lived NBC show that had a lot of ambition, but didn't get renewed and had terrible ratings, obviously. But I think people know Ian McShane pretty well now. Now he's in things like...
I'd say so.
He's in things like Pirates of the Caribbean 4, which, huge fan. No, just kidding. I've actually never seen any of the Pirates movies, because I don't own... I'm pretending I'm being a snob now, although I am kind of a snob. Anyway.
I've never seen a movie that was in wide release. What's that like?
Yeah.
I don't know.
What's I only
Disney?
Watch indie movies.
Yeah. I only watch movies that are made by my own friends.
Right. You know, it's got Molly Parker. I'm kind of surprised she hasn't been in any much since Deadwood. She was in that that show called Swing Town that was on CBS a few summers ago. That was clearly too risque for CBS because it was kind of like a sort of tamer version of Boogie Nights. Not sans the porn, but it was, you know,
that tamer,
right? But it was about,
you know, it's like Boogie Nights minus porn,
right? Swingers and there's Swing Town, get it? Because they're swingers.
I don't get it.
But you know, I really love Molly Parker. Kim Dickens, who is on Treme now, she was
sorry,
yeah, good one. She was on Friday Night Lights. Who did she play? She's Matt Saracen's mom, right?
When did she come into the show? Was she on the pilot?
She wasn't in the pilot, but I think she comes in fairly soon after.
Well, now I've got even more reasons.
Spoiler alert, she's at a saloon that's kind of a competing saloon with Al Swearingen's Gem Saloon.
Okay, I think I have, if I may.
Sure. Oh,
I'm still pondering that what changed my mind question. And you know, I'm fickle. I'm a woman, so that's my prerogative, right?
Ladies are fickle.
Who knows what? Who knows
right,
why
ladies?
We get a notion and run
right,
with it?
Right.
Probably my uterus moving all around.
Right.
But no, I think Al Swearingen.
Yeah.
Swearingen.
Yeah.
He is probably the number one reason that I'll come back. So I started it off for Timothy Oliphant, but I'm coming back for Al Swearingen. He was a riot and a half. But I also think there's more to him.
Oh, there's a lot
more
to
him. Than just that weathered face and that...
There's a lot more to him.
That sailor tongue.
You know, I think a fair argument could be made that he... Ian McShane's performance of Al Swearingen is probably one of the all-time great performances on TV. And I don't think I'm using hyperbole by saying that. He's just phenomenal.
I also liked that feller from... what's that show I like? Newhart.
Oh, yeah. William Sanderson as E.B. Farnum, the kind of fumbling hotel owner who's... Mm-hmm. As the show goes on, you'll find more and more cringeworthy scenes with him. He's kind of a half-wit, but he wants to... he wants.
Well, I don't think he's a halfwit.
Well, okay, he's not. You're right. I was reading that Onion article about Faulknerian love children earlier today.
Halfwit man children.
Man children. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No,
he's a full wit.
He's definitely a full wit. He's maybe like, you know, not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Maybe 9/10 whip.
Maybe he's just, yeah. Maybe he's like not so street smart.
Yeah, I think that's his problem.
That's the problem.
Kind of a book smart.
I'm going to continue to list people on the show. John Hawkes.
Ah, yes. The incomparable John Hawkes.
Academy Award nominee, was he, for Winter's Bone this year? He's also in Eastbound and Down.
Yep.
He's a great actor. Man, who else? Keith Carradine starts off the show. Didn't mean to kind of spoil things for you there, although if you know history at all, you probably know that his character... I always want to say it's Wyatt Earp, but he's not Wyatt Earp.
Wild Billy Hickok?
Is he?
Bill Hickok?
Yeah, he is.
Bill Hickok.
Yeah.
Also, I really like the character of Calamity Jane.
Yeah, she's great.
Also
Robin Wiegert.
Historical. But yeah. I enjoy her. I look forward to seeing what happens with her. I wish that my name had a Wild or a Calamity or a Kablamo or...
I was telling Bridget when we were watching the pilot, she said something about, you know, cross Wild Bill Hickok. And I said that I would never play cards with anybody who has the name Wild in front of their real name.
Right. Crazy would be a good rule.
Yeah. Any of those.
Because, like, I would play cards with a, you know, Bill...
Oh,
but,
sure.
But would I play cards with
sure.
with I'd Crazy play, Bill,
I would,
the Killin' Fool? Probably
right,
not.
Exactly.
Quick to draw.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, the cast is great. David Milch, the creator, uses a lot of swears. That's kind of the first thing you notice, is there is a whole lot of cursing in the show.
It sort of makes you blush, even for
an
HBO show.
It really does.
Even
it
more so than, like, Tell Me You Love Me. Like...
Oh, yeah.
Which was a show that I think was maybe had the most, like, sex.
It's the most penises.
Yeah. But this
show... Even more than Game of Thrones. Which,
but this show is really Deadwood, the language. I don't say that a lot, but the language,
I think
my goodness.
It's the only show that I can think of that when it was on the air, it with the, you know, the TV ratings that come up and they give you some warnings. It was the only show that I ever saw that had the warning of graphic language. You know,
graphic
usually
language.
You see strong language.
Sure,
but
not graphic language.
Graphic, yeah.
I look forward to the language getting graphic. I don't know that it's been
it gets more graphic. I've actually seen the first two seasons, watched them back when we had HBO, and watched them anytime that I was alone because
so
nobody
creepy.
Would watch it with me.
Oh.
So thank you, sweetie, for...
No
watching
problem.
It with me again.
And Chris.
He's also sweet, I guess.
We both call Chris sweetie. That's our little nickname
right.
for him.
So, yeah, so a lot can be said about David Milch's dense dialogue. And, you notice the swears first, but deeper than the swears, there's kind of a poetic language use throughout the show. And I think Al Swearingen's character probably has the most... of those kind of soliloquies. I'm excited to rewatch some of the scenes with you guys where he goes off on a tangent for about 5 minutes and you just like your jaw's on the floor.
Look forward to that too.
Yeah.
I have to say too about the swearing, like I like that I wasn't in the West.
Sure.
In the old I
sure.
wasn't alive in the ye
sure.
olden yesteryear.
The olden days. Sure.
When does this show take place? Do you know?
In the 1870s.
Okay, so I would imagine that at a town like Deadwood, that's probably a more realistic...
Right, yeah.
Well, I mean, people probably were freer with
right,
language
and,
like that,
right.
And I've never seen a show set in ye olden days, and I've seen westerns that are fairly,
edgy westerns.
Yeah. But I appreciate that this is like a super edgy... Western, because it's actually probably closer in terms of realism.
Right, it's kind of...
In a town like Deadwood, to how these people probably talk to each other and treated each other and related to each other. But it's one of those things, you know, you see... you kind of develop a sense of history based a lot on movies. At least I did growing up.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So there's a little gut reaction that I always have, as silly as I know it is, that I think, you know, they had the C word in 1870? Like, that was my first thought. Like, really? Would they have been using this kind of...
What David Milch has said, actually, is some of the language that they use on the show might not be the same words that they used then, but the purpose of using kind of modern swears is to kind of put you in the time that kind of the equivalent of what they were actually saying.
Right.
So no, it's more or less a representation of the time. And that kind of makes it also, I think as the show goes on, I don't mean to spoil anything more, but there are some interesting twists on the Western genre where you kind of expect, you know, in the Western, you expect the good guy to walk away, and there really isn't a good guy or a bad guy in this show. Mm-hmm. And there isn't, when people die, it's not necessarily a hero's death or a villain's death. It's just
a death.
It just is.
And I guess that's what I mean in terms of realism. More authentic, maybe, is the better word.
In terms of,
like, when you think about this time period in American history that's often represented in very black and white ways with a mild language.
Right?
There's a definite good guy, a definite bad guy, where in reality they were just people.
Yeah.
They're probably all a little bit bad, maybe a tiny bit good, and the language is different, but I'm sure people living in these gritty towns, working in saloons, you know, killing people for a living, it's less quaint than I think a lot of Westerns make it seem.
Sure.
Right? It kind of makes it more present for us, like Qualler was saying. So I like that. I think I like it. It's cool.
It's a good show.
It's good.
You should watch it. You should watch it. We'll give it a watch. Watch it this summer.
Watch it. How many seasons were there before we move on?
There are three seasons.
Okay.
And the sad thing is the third season didn't really end.
Aww.
And there isn't really what you would call a series finale to the show, because that was one of the shows that got kind of caught in HBO's... Holy crap, The Sopranos is about to end. What are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Crossfires. Well, they were trying to save money. And David Milch is kind of notorious for being kind of a hothead and kind of a little bit crazy. So unfortunately, the show got canceled sooner than it should have been. But my understanding is that it still ends on a note that is satisfying and... on the Blu-rays, Full Circle, that we got, David Milch gives a little... there's like a 20-minute feature with David Milch talking about what the ending would have been like. So, it's going to be good.
That's cool. I look forward to it. Do we have all three seasons?
Yeah, the complete series on Blu-ray. Right.
That's not really...
Yeah.
Okay, so...
As a tonal shift, but
if you're feeling a little less kicky, and feeling a little more sad,
and if you're feeling a little more like you have the same DVD shelves as we do, you'll probably find these two shows next to each other on the DVD shelf. If you alphabetize like I do, obviously you alphabetize TV shows and movies separate, of course. You'll find Deadwood right next to a little show called Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about 6 Feet Under next.
We'll talk about that.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah,
sad.
Yeah.
So Dawson's Creek. Well, you know, I'm gonna stick with it. You feel a little sad.
Yeah, Bridget.
I think Dawson's Creek is the perfect show for you. I recently received all six seasons, ladies and gents. I don't know how you feel about that. I personally thought it lasted way longer, but when I thought about it, no, six is about right.
You know what? I think it, One Tree Hill, they're on, like, their millionth season.
Right.
Why couldn't Dawson's Creek last longer? Although, I guess...
I'm glad that they ended it, because season six is totally wacky.
Did you like season six?
I did.
Okay.
But I don't think that it could have kept going.
Right.
I think it had run its course.
Well, I think one good thing about the show... is that they never none of the four core cast members left the show throughout the series run.
Yeah.
I think that's really...
It also
makes it kind of special in terms of, like, teen dramas.
I would agree. It also helps that there were only four main cast members.
Because
if you think about a lot of other teen dramas, well, I guess the OC, there were really only the four.
Yeah, yeah.
And they...
But, you know, Marissa was kind of dead weight.
Yeah. But I'm thinking of it in terms of, I measure, the thing against which I will forever measure all of their teen dramas, and I think I'm not alone in this, which of course is Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah.
And 90210.
And
that had about a million different characters.
And it was
in the
able
cast.
To kind of go on for a long time because it was right. able to kind of revolve cast members like that. But Dawson's Creek didn't do that.
And they did pretty okay. So the four main cast members were there from the beginning. Of course, Dawson, Joey,
Dawson, Larry,
Pacey, and Jen. The, you know, little...
The fearsome foursome.
Fearsome foursome. That's good. Fearsome foursome. But in season two, they did introduce, of course, to that cast, Andy and her brother Jack. Jack, interestingly, stayed on the show for the remainder of the sixth season as well. Andy only lasted... up into through season four, and she even kind of came and went mid-season. I think mid-season four, I might be wrong, I kind of hate Andy too, and I don't want to hate Andy.
I know.
They're like,
she's so freaking
like,
annoying.
Calm down a little bit.
I know.
Just chill. Actually, my favorite character throughout the series, even and
Graham, Jennifer.
Well, no, but I do like her.
Okay.
No, but my favorite character is related to Graham's, and I think it's interesting that she remains my favorite character, even though I think she undergoes the most significant transformation in terms of what her character is from beginning to end, but it pretty much makes sense. It's Jen.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's
fantastic. Well, Michelle Williams
Michelle Williams is fantastic. But I just think Jen is my favorite character. I think she's...
She's pretty great.
She's the most
wonderful.
Yeah, she's the most dynamic character. She seems the most real. Joey is annoyingly kind of ethical and prudish.
Yeah.
Dawson is that annoying, I'm such a good guy and girls don't like me, but I only like
pretty girls ever.
And I'm not actually a good guy because I'm totally self-absorbed.
Yeah, Dawson's got a little bit of the Brandon Walsh syndrome.
I would say a lot. He does mature.
I like him a lot more than Brandon Walsh, though.
Because unlike Brandon Walsh, after Dawson graduates high school, he actually gets a little bit more mature, I think, his character.
Yeah,
like, definitely. By the end of it, he's like, yeah, you know what, Joey? I'm not as good for you as Pacey is.
Right.
I'm cool with that. Like, and you know what, Jen? Yeah, we weren't... Like, he kind of gets over himself a little bit.
Yeah, which is good.
Brandon Walsh, yeah, he's
Brandon
horrible.
Walsh is the worst character.
Also, James Vanderbeek, as far as I know, did not produce any episodes of Dawson's Creek, unlike Jason Priestley, who produced, and maybe even directed?
Oh, yeah, he directed a lot of episodes,
Blah, blah, blah. Don't get me wrong, I love Dawson, or 90210.
I will say, when, Dawson's Creek is, in some ways, it's kind of the true teen drama of our generation, because that was the only...
It's like a time capsule.
We were sophomores when the show started, and they were also sophomores. So it's kind of like a window, like a looking glass into our lives.
Right.
Personally, our lives might...
Actually, they were sophomores when the show started. We were freshmen. But they were sophomores for two seasons.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we kind of caught up to them.
Because it started in... January.
Right. That's right.
So we got, and it's wonderful, like, looking back and, like, the music, the way they dress, the movies they reference.
Yeah.
Like, everything is just, like, spot on, like, oh my gosh, it's like I'm in high school right now. Whereas I think I'm far enough, and I'm sure that 90210 does that as well.
We're a little older.
But I'm far enough removed from that I don't have that kind of nostalgic connection to 90210.
And then the OC was kind of, like, winking, like... It was, the OC was actually more geared toward, I think it was actually a show about college people, but they had to set it in high school. But all of the problems they had on the OC were actually just, like, college-age problems and not really high school problems.
And, that's actually one thing that I kind of appreciate about Dawson's Creek. As much as there's a lot of complaints about the the language, speaking of, you know, language in right. the shows. Because oh, the language so in Dawson's extreme. Creek, no, it complains because they don't talk like high schoolers. They're using oh, sure. these, like, $10 words.
Kind of a...
And they're...
It's very... It's similarly... Similarly, actually, you could draw a lot of connections between Dawson's Creek and Deadwood.
Mm-hmm.
The language is also is a very important part of Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, and I think that's that, about and the I only think connection that I can make,
but that's alright.
Specifically an important part, or, you know, intentionally, it got a lot of complaints, I think, from critics. All these the critics, you know.
What do they know, right?
But, because they don't talk like high schoolers, but I think that was done intentionally, because I think that in a lot of ways, despite that, you're kind of like Deadwood, the first thing you're hit with is the language. With Dawson's Creek, the first thing you're hit with, at least when I watch it, mm-hmm. is that these are supposed to be 15-year-old kids, and they're talking, like...
philosophically, really, I mean...
It's just the vocabulary, the language yeah. that they're using is just... And they're totally able to articulately and accurately express the what they're feeling and why right. they're feeling it. Like, 15-year-olds can't do that. But... In other ways, I think it is kind of representational the way that Deadwood might be in the dialogue, in that it's actually authentic in the feelings that they're expressing too mm-hmm. articulately, I think are really very accurate 15-year-old feelings.
That's an interesting way to put it.
And I think that they chose to articulate that by, like, saying it. So if a 15-year-old yeah. had at his or her disposal all this... the way to actually express themselves like this is what they would be talking about, because this is what they're feeling. And I think because of that, I think when I watch Dawson's Creek, as opposed to 90210, as opposed to the OC, where I'm thinking these are problems that are, like, ridiculous soap opera problems, even though Dawson's Creek is also kind of a ridiculous soap opera, I think that the problems they deal with are a lot more realistic.
Right.
Because a lot like... of it is just, like, I like a boy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the boring stuff that you actually... do struggle with as a 15-year-old kid, so I appreciate that.
That was very well put, Bridget.
Thanks. I watch a lot of Dawson's Creek, so I'm able to articulate yeah. my complex
right.
Feelings.
Right. I will say that when the show was on the air first, I watched it. I actually watched most of the first season when it was on, because I'm a nerd. But I was always really jealous of Pacey when I was in high school, because, like, girls that I would know in high school would be like, oh, Pacey, he's so hot. I mean, he's funny. And then I'd be like, I'm funny. Why am I not hot? And
oh, but it sounds someone else had a little bit of the Brandon Walsh
yeah,
syndrome.
Yeah, I know. And that's why I can relate to Dawson.
Oh.
But, you know, I really like Joshua Jackson as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind James Vanderbeek, even though, like, the kids these days, all they know him from is, like, their little memes and their James Vander memes. And clearly there are a lot of really cheesy parts of Dawson's Creek, but they always, you know, all those really bland songs that they use on the show, they like... burrow into my heart and pull on the, like, emotion strings
way
that, like, they really shouldn't.
Yeah.
Because, come on.
I think that Dawson's Creek walks a fine line between uber schmaltzy and mm-hmm. that Kevin Williamson sort of self-awareness that you get in the Scream
yeah.
Franchise. And I think that that's kind of what saves it. Even though I think he was only really involved in the first season.
First two seasons.
Yeah. And you can kind of tell that there's a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets more schmaltzy and more soap opera-like. And then he came back to do the final episode, which, holy cow, I watched the other day, not having watched it since it was on the air, and I was basically sitting at home in the middle of the afternoon on a weekday, holding both of the dogs against their will because I just wanted someone to hold... and crying and crying and crying because that last episode is so freaking sad. Spoil alerts, but it's been off the air for a while, so get over it. In the last episode, they do sort of a 5 years later, which Qualler pointed out, well, now they can actually play characters that are appropriate, like the age that they are, right? So in the final episode, they're all supposed to be 25, which they probably were all 25. And of course, Dawson is a successful.
Let's not spoil it too much.
Let's just spoil it too much. Okay, we won't spoil it too much, but.
Was it good?
It was good. It's really sad. I want to say why I was so sad. Can I say that?
No, don't. Well, okay.
I don't
know. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen it, Jen dies.
Yeah, that's sad.
And it's really sad. It's really sad. And Michelle Williams is brilliant. That's a hard role to play, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as an actress myself,
right.
I know. I would imagine that it's difficult to do that again without being. She does it, and that the whole thing is done with that. It's schmaltzy and it's cheesy, but like you can't help it. You get totally sucked in, and it's also a little bit self-aware, just enough to kind of have a sense of humor about itself, and it's just fantastic.
Well, I think that's similar to Deadwood. What you're saying is it retained a sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is what ultimately keeps it. I'm not as big into these kinds of shows as you are, but I think it ultimately keeps it a very watchable.
You mean these kinds of shows?
I don't know.
Girl shows?
Chick shows.
Chick shows?
Whatever. Not gonna heteronormatize things.
Whatever.
For you. Sorry. But it's eminently watchable.
Yeah.
And
even more so now, perhaps, than when we were in high school or college.
Yeah.
Like, I think I'm enjoying it more this go around.
And there's something kind of comforting about putting in a disc before you go to bed, and then when the episode is over, hearing that very gentle ending credits theme song. That we'll hear it at the end of this episode and hopefully put you to sleep. That flute, oh god, it's beautiful.
Okay, I have to do another spoiler because I want to talk about an example of how the show is self-aware in a way that is funny,
okay.
I think, or has a sense of humor about itself, because I think it becomes obvious that the James Vanderbeek Dawson character is somewhat autobiographical. Kevin Williamson.
Oh, yeah.
And in the final season, or the final, series finale, sorry, final episode, he's got a hit show on the WB
called The Creek.
And it's basically, you know, as meta as you can get. It's his story.
Well,
him and Joey being played out on a WB show. And in the dialogue in that show is even more inflated than the dialogue that the Dawson's Creek characters use, which is already more inflated than the dialogue that quote-unquote real high school characters would use. So I think that's another nod of, like, yeah, we get it. We know what people say about it, and we're doing it on purpose.
Kevin Williamson wrote one of my top three films of the year so far in Scream 4. One of the other
it's
top two.
One of your
two.
Top three films of the year so far?
I've only seen, like, three movies, but
what
it's definitely
Sucker
number
Punch?
Three. Oh, it's better than Sucker Punch.
Yeah, I agree. Scream no, Four. I actually loved Scream 4.
But
we love you,
number
Kev.
Two was Meek's Cutoff, which featured Michelle Williams, which we saw.
Yeah, and
obviously this isn't a film net cast, but that was amazing.
I love that Michelle Williams, that spunky little harlot from Dawson's Creek, is making a real name for herself.
And
she's
like,
a good actress, and I think now looking back, after seeing her in other things, like Brokeback Mountain and Meek's Cutoff and Wendy and Lucy, now going back and watching her act the role of Jen, you can tell
you can see it for sure.
That she is this really awesome actress.
She's always like
on
the thing I appreciate. Yeah, the thing I appreciate her about her is how game she is for whatever the writers throw at her, which is similar to a cast member of the fourth show that we're going to talk about, and I won't say who or what it is, but we'll talk about that later.
But since we do have two shows to talk about, we should probably move on. So Dawson's Creek, we love the...
Give it a watch.
Great summer viewing. If nothing else, the scenes of... I mean, it's shot in North Carolina, and it's beautiful. It is. I'm not talking about cinematography or anything like that, but just the setting, the scenery is beautiful.
It takes place in
Cape Side, Mass.
Right, so it's
made
not
up town.
Really.
But it's shot in North Carolina, and it's beautiful.
Right.
So anyway, moving on.
So,
number three.
The third show that we're continuing to watch this summer is 6 Feet Under.
Do, 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 do.
which I've been covering at theblogulator.com for almost a year, and painstakingly watching episode by episode.
It's true.
And when there is audio commentary on my DVDs, I watch the episode and then watch it with audio commentary, and then watch all of the featurettes that are on each of the DVDs. I really feel like this is the best use of DVD purchases that I've ever made, so I'm kind of proud of that.
Yeah.
So,
especially when all those blog posts are published into your first book.
Oh yeah.
Which will inevitably happen.
Of course, the book on 6 feet under.
Yeah.
Dot dot dot.
Six feet under the blog, the book, the review.
Exactly.
The movie.
So, as of right now, we are on season 2. And the last episode we watched, actually last night, and there'll be a blog post later this week, is episode 9, Someone Else's Eyes, written by show creator Alan Ball.
I'd like to put Alan Ball and Kevin Williamson in a room together and see what they could come up with.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see that, because I think Kevin Williamson might rein in some of Alan Ball's kind of...
weirdness, and I use
tendencies.
That in the worst sense of the word.
Creepy tendencies.
Creepy, that's better.
Well,
he would rein in the creep factor.
Right, and Alan Ball would maybe show Kevin Williamson
maybe
a little
push
more
him
about
a little.
Yeah, push him, see what he can do more than just the meta stuff.
Or it could turn out to be just the creepiest teen drama that we've ever seen.
I would
ever
love to see
I'm
that.
Picturing a lot of scenes of old men just, like, smelling underwear.
Yeah. And just being, like...
And just being weird about it.
You know, I've never
well,
had
like,
sex
well,
like,
while Hotel California plays. No, I don't think... No dialogue, even. Just,
okay.
Just shots of
okay.
men
interesting
sniffing underwear.
Interesting crossover potential.
Yeah.
So, 6 Feet Under is a show that was... One of the shows that I would say put me on the I love serialized television map. It was history wise, it was kind of the second big show that HBO premiered after The Sopranos. Once The Sopranos got really big, this was kind of their second big project. And at the time, Alan Ball was coming off of American Beauty, which had just won some Oscars, and. You know, so it was kind of a big deal when it came out, and it was kind of...
still kind of a big deal to me. And we've talked about 6 Feet Under before.
Yeah.
Because it's made our top shows of all time list, so we don't want to...
You know, I think, and I'm just going to talk about the show up to the point that we're at, because I don't want to spoil our readers who are watching our
reviews.
Waiting
with bated breath.
Waiting until we watch an episode so we can tell them what
when is the next Twaller blog post coming out about 6 Feet Under.
I have to say, like,
I can't
soon.
Wait.
You know, in some respects, I think, looking back at 6 Feet Under, I think my memory tends to be a little harder on it than it really deserves.
Mm.
I think,
yeah, because I was pushing for this show more than you really liked it before you started reblogging it,
You are. And I think the first time I watched it, I loved it. I loved every moment of it. And then watching it in bits and pieces and kind of as the show ended and kind of the whole hype surrounding the series finale and kind of the common criticisms laid upon it in some of its later seasons. I think I kind of subconsciously / consciously picked up on that. And
cough, snob, cough.
Yeah, shut up. But, you know, I think the show still has some flaws. I think there are still some parts that make me not quite as excited. I think anything to do with the Kroner funeral homes trying to buy Fisher and Sons is just kind of like we're beating a dead horse over and over. The whole Kroner is a corporation, but Fisher and Sons is a family business, and we do things with a family.
Yeah, but it was still finding its footing.
It was. And actually, episode 8, which was one that I don't think I'd ever actually seen in full before. Episode 8 of Season 2 was called It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year, and it kind of set to the backdrop of Nathaniel's one-year anniversary of his death.
In Christmas time, of course.
On Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And there were...
Talk about a tearjerker.
Yeah, I think that was the only episode of the show that showed Nathaniel, the father patriarch of the family, as he actually was, versus how his memory helps us to find out what our characters are actually thinking about.
So it was
about.
Actual flashbacks to actual Nathaniel.
Flashbacks to real life Nathaniel.
As opposed to Nate talking to imagined Nathaniel.
Yeah, and it was really touching because it was... It went back to each of the characters' last memories of Nathaniel, and a lot of them were really sweet and really... one that stood out to me that helped maybe forgive some of the, I would say, pointlessness of his storyline is Federico's last memory of him. And his last memory was just on Christmas Eve, and Nathaniel said, "Why are you here, Federico? Why don't you go home and be with your family?" And... that little scene helped explain some of why Federico is always mad at Nate and David, and
who treat him a lot worse than Nathaniel.
They do.
Nathaniel seemed really to treat him like a member of the family.
Really well, yep. And yeah, so
it kind of made his hostility a little more understandable, because sometimes early on, I think Federico is a character that sometimes is...
Well, I think in season one, he was kind of like comic relief.
Yeah.
And then in season two, it's at some points, it kind of feels like they don't really know what to do with him, so he's doing something completely different from what the Fisher family is doing, which right now it's kind of like he moved into a house and then found out that his cousin was... Was it his cousin or...
His cousin was having sex with a man
and
in his home, and he got upset. But yeah, it seems like, where is this Federico storyline going?
Yeah. But that, you know, that kind of thing kind of helps tie it back in together. And I think there's still... I mean, you can quibble with a lot of shows in general, but I think overall, I think that it's still a really strong show.
Yeah.
And you know, that's another example of a cast just being really great, I think... Peter Krosa.
Is I would say phenomenal.
He's great as Nate. He's
actually probably my least favorite in terms of
character
acting.
Yeah, but he's still. I mean, he's really good for the role, and he's eminently
and
watchable.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that term again.
That's true.
Michael C. Hall, obviously.
Michael C. Hall is brilliant.
Great.
When is he going to get the Emmy? Has he already?
for Dexter.
Oh.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm just saying, in general, he's a great actor. It's his turn.
Yeah. Frances Conroy is as Ruth is...
She's great.
Also great.
She's a stage actress, right?
Yeah.
So was Michael C. Hall.
Yeah.
And I actually think Claire does a great...
Yeah.
She's...
Lauren Ambrose.
Mm-hmm.
And, so they're all great.
All great.
And, you know, we're at the point of the show now. The last episode that we saw was... Nate finding out that Lisa was pregnant.
Yeah, and everything's about to change.
Yeah.
Brenda's kind of going off the deep end. There's another character that I just adore.
Yeah.
Brenda. Brenda is kind of the Jen Lindley.
Sure.
Of Six Feet
sure.
Under.
Sure, she has some
She's kind of got a dark issues. Cast, darker, you know, and some of the other more moralistic, more annoying Nate Joey Dawson characters.
I think what
are kind of too hard on her. I think other characters are often too hard on Brenda.
I think what we're learning from this show is that sexism.
Mm-hmm.
Is it over, Bridget? I thought it was over.
No, you're learning that from this show.
No,
duh.
I know. It's a little joke.
Oh, here's another connection between Dawson's Creek and Six Feet Under.
And
are you
Deadwood?
Ready for this?
And Deadwood, is it a connection to? Sure. Let's say it is.
Sure. Billy Chenoweth is played
Ooh.
By... What's that actor's name?
Jeremy Sisto.
Jeremy Sisto is in the final episode of Dawson's Creek.
Really?
As 25-year-old Joey Potter's live-in boyfriend.
Weird.
Yeah. And he appears like... out of nowhere, well, because it's 5 years later, at the very beginning of that episode, and you're like, what, Billy?
Who's Joey's?
Joey's, okay. Joey's boyfriend, yeah. Joey's very serious boyfriend.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And Jeremy Sisto enjoys watching episodes of Deadwood. That's a lot. but he's handsome, like Timothy Oliphant is handsome.
So. Yeah.
There's your connection.
So I think if you can get over, if I can get over some of the Alan Balliness of the show, which I would define
as... Kevin Williamson would rein that in.
I would define that specifically, the things that irritate me about 6 Feet Under are just
heavy-handed symbolism.
You know what? I don't even mind the heavy-handed symbolism at all, actually. I kind of like it secretly. Not so secretly. The things that annoy me are, like, the really broad characters who show up sometimes that, like, don't fit in at all. But other than that, I think it's a very quality show. And he had a lot of really excellent writers on his payroll that wrote some... I think some of the best episodes are not written by Alan Ball, but they're written by some of the other staff members who went on to other shows and are... Clearly, I think Alan Ball said when True Blood started that he wanted to hire them back, but they all would cost way too much money, so he couldn't hire them. And they're all off running their own shows or joining other shows, writing staffs, writing movies. Yeah, there are a lot of really well-written episodes. Some episodes that are kind of clunkier than usual. But overall, I think I'm ready to put 6 Feet Under back on my top 10 list of best shows.
I'm proud of you. Firmly under Dawson's Creek.
Oh, sure.
Shall we quickly talk about the last...
Yes.
Sort of totally different direction from the...
But there's clearly a connection, and the connection is that all of this show probably had... people from all three of these shows on it at some point.
Yeah.
And probably. I'm just totally...
As hosts or...
Stage... I don't know. That's probably a total lie.
Okay.
I know that... I think James Vanderbeek hosted this show once.
Did he?
I think so. I know there have been Dawson's Creek spoofs on this show before. Mm-hmm. What show are we talking about, Bridget?
Saturday Night Live.
The 90s.
This has been a real comfort to us in the summer months. Watching on Netflix.
Netflix has all of the seasons of Saturday Night Live, sans the musical guests and some sketches that I think had copyright issues,
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah,
but also kind of shortens them up nicely so that we can.
Yeah, you can watch
an episode
whole episode
in about 40 minutes.
Yeah, which is nice.
And they're funny. Laugh a minute.
Well, we started watching it. I think we kind of started going through the series and kind of started randomly in about 1990. And now we're at 1993-94 season, which... as somebody who's read a lot of books about Saturday Night Live, personally, I highly recommend the book Live from New York. It's kind of a cast member's telling of the history of Saturday Night Live. Very interesting stuff. That was season 19, and it was kind of the season before the famously disastrous 20th season. Which is when almost all of the cast members got fired and there was a lot of talk about the show finally being canceled. And I'm really interested, I'm looking forward to getting to season 20 to see if it's really as bad as the history shows.
As the history books tell.
Yeah.
But so, we've been having a lot of fun.
We have been having fun.
Phil Hartman
is the guy
pretty much can do no wrong.
Yeah, he's the guy who I was referencing earlier in that the writers, no matter what stuff they throw at him, good or bad, he always put 110% into every sketch he was in, and it really makes you appreciate what a comic genius he was. Because even like the lamest sketches,
Phil Hartman, like, makes it funny.
Yeah, he's just I really miss Phil Hartman a lot.
Yeah,
tear. I'm sorry that he's gone.
Oh, I'm sad in real life, like I was sad at Brutendlein when Jen died.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So I'm really impressed that as the show, kind of in the early 90s, the show started evolving. They started adding more cast members that we all know and love now. Adam Sandler, Chris Farley. Chris Farley is another amazing comic talent. David Spade, Rob Schneider.
Adam Sandler, too. All funnier than I remember.
Yeah.
Rob Schneider had some really funny sketches.
Yeah.
And I was like, really?
Rob Schneider, huh?
Rob Schneider of Hot Girls.
Right. But it's interesting to see that even when, like, Dana Carvey started, like, left the show, and some of the other cast members who joined the show in its resurgence in the mid-80s, as they started to depart the show one by one, Phil Hartman stayed on, and he was still totally a superstar in all the sketches.
Yeah.
So, Phil?
We miss you. And you've done a good job.
I'm trying to think of an appropriate corny song that...
I don't want to wait for our lives to be over.
Yeah, that's good.
We're born to know right now. What will it be? Phil Hartman is kind of like the Michelle Williams or the...
Oh, yeah. I mean, the same thing. Michelle Williams, she...
Al Swearingen.
Even all the stupid...
Or the... I'm trying to connect it to all
okay,
of them.
Okay,
or the...
Peter Carlson. No. Michael C. Hall.
Michael C. Hall.
They threw a lot of
crap
at him.
They're not usually, like, the star
right.
of the sketches. They're right?
It's like the unsung kind of, hero.
Yeah.
Of
so
the
our,
show.
Our four unsung heroes are...
I'm going to go with it, even though clearly Al Swearingen is not an unsung hero. He's
okay,
just a
I was
going to
say
hero.
Deadwood, I'm not sure.
But
who
yeah,
else could be the... But he's not Timothy Oliphant.
Ian McShane?
Yeah.
Yeah, as
you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, so like.
Yeah, I guess.
Ian McShane
Seth
would be
Bullock
the Dawson.
Is kind of the. Well, so I would say Seth Bullock is more. That's Timothy Oliphant's character,
okay.
who's a real life character, by the way.
Woo-hoo.
He's a real life person.
That's like the Dawson.
He's kind of the Dawson of Deadwood.
This is getting tricky.
It is.
This web that we weave, you know, maybe.
It all makes sense in the Excel spreadsheet that I'm not actually going to put together.
Yeah.
But yeah, totally. Totally.
I think what we're trying to say is I don't want to wait.
Right.
So open up your morning light.
And say a little prayer.
For right?
For us. Pray a little prayer for us.
You know that if we ought to stay alive,
see the presence of me. What are the real words? That song is about the Civil War.
Yeah, it's
it's not at all.
Song.
About
high schoolers,
but
angsty
that's okay.
High schoolers. We don't actually, yeah, and it doesn't matter because I think starting in season 3 they replaced the song,
but only
on
the DVDs. Oh,
yeah.
That made me so mad.
With a horrible generic.
Heart is in my hands.
The heart
is in the clouds.
But like season 6 of Dawson's Creek, we're starting to wander. So let's bring
right.
it back.
SNL. I think my last point about SNL.
All right, let's hear it.
Anybody who says the show was great back in the day and now it's crap, that's not true because
it was always hit or miss.
It's always been hit or miss. Always. There have been better times when there have been better cast members, but it's always been hit or miss.
Yeah.
So
was that
there
a,
you go.
So
that's
we'll,
my last point
we'll
about
watch
SNL.
It. But it's fun. All of these shows kind of, in one way or another, take us down a different trip towards down memory lane.
Memory lane and, yeah.
Summer fun pass.
Summer fun pass.
So enjoy your summers.
Tell us what you guys are watching, if you want to do that. Make it a little interactive.
Is this a call-in show? Let's
yeah,
wait for it.
I wish. Callers.
The phone, nothing's ringing.
They're
we're at home
up.
Right now.
That's another show we should rewatch is Mr. Show.
We'll do that. That's what summer's for.
Next time, next summer,
yeah,
rewatch Mr. Show.
So to summarize, we have Deadwood.
Dawson's Creek.
6 Feet Under.
SNL
: the 90s.
SNL : the 90s.
Good summer fun.
And Cheers in there when we get a chance, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
I like Cheers. Anyway, this has been Qualler.
And Bridget.
And we talked about TV at the Fancy Pants Gangsters Network. Again, thank you, Fancy Pants Gangsters. Should we do one more plug for Monday night's TV night?
Yeah, June 13th.
June 13th, 9 p.m. at the Red Stag Supper Club.
If you like TV...
in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
If you like well-written, well-acted series that you probably have one nostalgic connection to or another, come for episodes of Veronica Mars this week.
Yeah, and we're co-sponsoring it with our co-netcasters at the Fancy Pants Gangsters Network, Girl Germs, and it's sure to be a good time. There'll be drink specials, and if you're in Minneapolis... you really have no excuse not to go there unless you're watching hockey, which I understand.
Yeah, and we'll be there, so if you want to come, like, punch me in the face because I said mean things about Alan Ball,
yeah,
I would maybe advise you not to do that, but...
maybe the show HHR Hater will come and join us. And
finally.
For all the celebrities we bashed on
the
blog.
We're just gunning to be on the hater.
For the past 5 years.
Yeah.
So this has been Qualler, you're Bridget, and we already said that. Thank you very much. Have a great week. Thank you.